Good morning, Connecticut. To our friends across the sound, it's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, for many of the 35 years, the Northeast Organic Farming Association has been hosting their extensive winter conferences. The award-winning For the People has been there, and the 2017 is no different. So sit down and check out a number of interviews we captured from Western Connecticut State University last weekend with guests and exhibitors at the NOFA conference. We'll talk about bees and worms and alpacas, oh my, as well as programs to help establish new and young Connecticut farmers and a program that connects them with a growing network of school and institutional food service providers. We'll even tell you about an effort to establish a family farm trail in Central Litchfield County. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Tomorrow night, it's coming up. That's right. Join Autism Speaks New England for an adult services town hall. It's Monday, March 20th at the University of Hartford in West Hartford, beginning at 6 p.m. This town hall will focus on the services and resources available to adults on the autism spectrum. Panelists will provide you with options to think about and explore as you or your family seek out adult services. Young adults preparing for the transition to adulthood, adults with autism, family members, school staff, adult service system professionals, and policymakers are all welcome. The event is free, but registration is required. So go to autismspeaks.org or web search Autism Speaks New England Adult Services Town Hall.
Well, we are here again for probably around the 30th of their 35 years. It's the 35th annual NOFA Winter Conference celebrating the Northeast Organic Farming Association of Connecticut. We're at Western Connecticut State University, and we're opening with Jeff Cordulac, Executive Director of NOFA, who has graced our airwaves for a few years now. So, Jeff... First of all, thanks for having us, and tell us a little bit about some of the exciting things that you've been helping orient NOFA toward since we spoke to you last. I'm noticing from the emails and the notices I'm getting and all the press I'm seeing that it really seems that you're being very successful in reaching out and beginning to kind of engage more consumers to come face-to-face with the farmers and gardeners who you try to train and help develop best practices.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having us on the show. You know, we are very excited to be hosting this conference, you know, 35 years in, and I think we're making a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, our membership is growing when it comes to farms. We're up to 262 farms that I can count that affiliate as a member with us, and then there's many others who aren't on our member rolls who we're trying to encourage to do things that tend towards organic. Of course, that's our end goal, certified organic farms, but there's a lot of places in between fully certified and on their way to being synthetic and toxin-free. Really what we're concerned about is getting synthetics off of the land, whether it's the lawn or the farm, and out of the food. So when it comes to consumers, the good news is that, you know, NOFA's been growing, and we're now able to help you even better with like our famous food guide. It's printed every year in March and mailed to our membership. You can look at it online as a PDF, or you can call the office and ask for a copy, or you can ask for boxes to be dropped off at your business location or your farmer's market. And this is basically a magazine full of farms and businesses throughout Connecticut. It's all by county. It's got all the information, what they sell. It also has all the latest on all those farmers markets. You know how hard that can be to find in one place. Well, by county, we got every market listed with the times all across the state. So when it comes to connecting consumers to local farmers and organic local farmers as well, we are the place to go. It's simply ctnofa.org. That's ctnofa.org. You probably know we stand for the Northeast Organic Farming Association. We're the Connecticut chapter. So we're NOFA Connecticut.
So can folks go to the NOFA website to also peruse the content from the magazine?
Oh, yes. The whole magazine's posted online year-round, so that PDF is there on the homepage. And we also have this Google Farm map you can click around on. That's kind of fun, too. We have a search engine for finding organic landscapers near you. People can simply go to our other website. It's linked from our Connecticut NOFA page. It's nofa.organiclandcare.net. And that's one of our search engines to find organic landscapers. And I wanted to share that this year we're going to build a search engine that is for all of our farms and restaurants that are in that Farm and Food Guide. Mm-hmm. That's the Connecticut NOFA Farm and Food Guide. Just came out this March. And we've been doing it for many years so that people can find a farmer near them or a restaurant or an organic dry cleaners or other businesses that are really helping to move the mark and help us either garden better in our backyards, shop from a local farmer, or basically stop sending money to the wrong businesses, you know?
Yep. Also, I've noticed that there seems to be a lot more events that NOFA is either partnering on or hosting itself at farms, getting people to come out and meet and eat in many cases.
Oh, yes. Well, we at NOFA are really into education. And education comes in all types and sizes. You know, we've got farmer education, you know, out there on the farm, learning in the field or in a classroom, some of the techniques, whether it's about planting itself or whether it's about planning your planting or your business software or whatever it is you're doing as a farmer. We host workshops of all kinds throughout the year, and we'd be interested in suggestions for things you hope to learn. We can put those together. But other than our farm trainings, we're also training landscapers to be organic. Not enough people know that we have the NOFA Organic Land Care Program. NOFA OLC, the Organic Land Care Program, is unique in the country. Basically, NOFA in New England wrote the standards for organic land care. That's landscaping, folks. Mm-hmm. So we're talking gardens, we're talking lawns, we're talking, you know, pollinator gardens, all that good stuff, mm-hmm. rain gardens. Organic ways are done by landscapers and farmers. So that's some of the classes we're offering throughout the year. And professionals might want to consider our accreditation in organic land care. It's something where they take a four-day class, and they take a test. And if they pass, they can be listed on our search engine and as a business that people can find. But other than farmers and landscapers, we also love to celebrate the local food. So consumers and foodies can look to Connecticut NOFA for some other fun events, whether it's a tasting event or a full-on farm-to-table dinner, or it's just meeting up and gathering somewhere and networking at one of the places across the state. It's really fun to get out and meet all these people hiding out there around Connecticut and the places you just don't pass by. So I hope people pick up our farm guide and hit the road, hopefully in their low-mileage Prius or high-mileage Prius.
Or their bike.
Yeah, their bicycle. That would be great.
Bring a big bag.
Yeah, you could use Metro North to get to a surprisingly diverse number of places, great, up the Danbury line, all the way out in New Haven.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's getting out to the farms. Maybe I should remind people about that whole CSA thing, you know, community-supported agriculture. It's like a subscription to a farmer near you. They may not even be near you, but they might drop in your town. So you look on our website for the CSAs, and you can maybe buy a subscription to a farm, and it will be delivered near you. And you can have fresh vegetables every week. It's a great thing to do, and it connects you directly to the farmer. That's one of the things we're teaching about here at the conference this weekend. We are very excited to have 45 presentations going on. So that's quite a lot of learning. We're teaching everything from simple how to not waste food when the lights go out, how to make the most when the lights go out, and maybe even winemaking 101, to get started in beekeeping, or how to know vegetable diseases, or cover cropping. What is cover cropping? Why do we do that? And why do we want to help the soil biology? You know, helping bacteria and viruses isn't first nature for people. And we're trying to teach people that the soil is live and it's thriving and it needs to be looked after and not punished with synthetic chemicals, you know, fumigants and things like that.
It sounds like you're making it really easy for people to understand as well. And let's face it, this has been going on for years and years in smaller circles. Why not bring it into the neighborhood and community gardens?
That's right. We really do hope that it goes beyond farmers and beyond landscapers to the community gardeners, to the backyard gardeners, and just to, you know, the school teachers and everybody, so they all have a little spot that they can grow something, whether it's to show a child growth, which is a miracle just to learn as a young person, or it's to, you know, help harvest. You know, it's great to be able to go out back, get some fresh herbs, do all sorts of things with, you know, a simple lettuce plant in your yard can become very special all of a sudden and something you're proud to show off. So I encourage you, consider, get a little garden started, whether it's in a container or not. And if you don't garden now, I'm sure it's going to make your life a little bit better.
Maybe it was my first grade bean plant in paper towels that got me into this whole thing. But it's been many, many years, and so pleased to be back here helping again to celebrate the Northeast Organic Farming Association, NOFA, Connecticut NOFA, ctnofa.org is their website. And we're here to bring you a number of the exhibitors from the 35th Annual Winter Conference, kicking things off with Jeff Korgulak, Executive Director. Jeff, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for being involved, and go organic, everybody.
So, well, we always check in with our friends in the beekeeping world every time we get involved with a NOFA project, and we're pleased to run into Jeff Keller. He's a part-time beekeeper and assisting here at the NOFA 35th Annual Winter Conference with Gold Star Honeybees. Jeff, thanks for talking to us.
Sure, I'm happy to talk to you about our honeybees and our products.
So how are the honeybees doing?
Well, we hope they're nice and clustered tightly and surviving the winter, but mm-hmm. honeybees are having a hard time. There's between pesticides and the varroa mite and everything else, and, you know, encroachment on their environment, it's hard for the bees. And you know, we're hearing of winter bee losses between 40 and 60%, sometimes 70% of bees, depending on the year.
And so the big drop-off of about a decade ago really is just sort of, you know, kind of trundling along near empty.
It is trundling along, and it's hard to keep track because a beekeeper, especially commercial beekeepers, they'll take a hive and they'll split it into two hives. And they'll split that into two hives, so it seems like they have four hives, but it was just one. It's the same amount of bees.
Oh, okay.
So, and then you know, they'll take those bees around. Commercial beekeepers will pollinate, and they'll take them out to California to pollinate 1 million acres of almonds that only bloom for 2 weeks. And then, since it's a monoculture and all that's there are almond trees, there's nothing for the bees for the rest of the year, so they have to take them somewhere else. So what we advocate is natural beekeeping in top bar hives where the bees get to make their own wax. And we advocate better for 1,000 people to have one or two hives each than one or two people to have 1,000 hives each.
And the top bar is really, as I learned probably from you folks a couple of years ago, I mean, you put this right out in the corner of your yard, on the corner of your deck even, you know, not somewhere in a high traffic area, but, I mean, it looks like it's a little bit, it really looks like a wooden xylophone that has a top on it. But tell us how the top bar hives work.
Well, with the top bar hive, as the name suggests, you lay a bar across the top of a cavity. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's a box that does look kind of like a xylophone.
Yeah.
And the bees build wax down there. They hang in chains, like a catenary curve, and they build wax. And the wax comes in an arc, where in the traditional Langstroth hive, they're given foundation. The foundation is either plastic or plastic-coated wax or something like that that has pre-printed hexagons on it. Us, man, you know, big brain, opposable thumbs, we think we know everything. So we tell them how to make hexagons. But they've been doing it 65 million years. So we think that the bees know a little better. Yeah. We let them make their own hexagons.
So how many? How small could a person go with a top bar hive?
You can go one, you know, one colony, one hive. The hive starts at about 10,000 bees. If you buy a package of bees and put it in there, at the height of the summer, it'll probably be 65,000 to 70,000 bees. And then as it gets towards winter, they pare the hive down. In late August, early September, they're going to kick all the guys out. Guys don't get to live through the winter. And the bees get a little bit different. During the summer, a female bee lasts about 42 days. The bees that go through the winter last about 5 months, and they're ready to start the hive up again in the spring.
Okay. So what is the, cost first, the top bar hive itself, and then give folks an idea of how much of an investment they might need to get started with a top bar hive and bring it to fruition?
Starting with absolutely nothing, if you don't want to do a whole lot of woodworking, to get all the equipment you need, the hive and the bees, is generally under $1,000. Okay. The hive we sell here is $495. Yeah. We sell packaged bees for $175. That's about $600, $650. And then you'll probably spend $100 on a bee jacket and gloves and tools.
Yeah. Handling equipment.
Handling equipment. Yeah. Right. You know, but it's definitely under $1,000.
And, you know, you said rather have 1,000 people with two hives than two people with 1,000.
Right.
Having two or three of these in a neighborhood, how much potential does that have to make a difference, both in not just sustaining but growing the local pollinator population and improving the environment in those neighborhoods?
Oh, boy, it's huge. Absolutely huge for the bees, you know, because if you're spreading them out and everybody has a couple of hives, you get better genetics. Because when a queen bee flies to get mated, she's not going to mate with the drones in her own hive. She's looking for other drones around the area. So mm-hmm. The more people who have bees, the better genetic diversity you have, the better chance the bees have to survive. So having pollinators around your gardens in the neighborhood are going to be beautiful, too. Mm.
So you're a part-time beekeeper. How much time do you actually invest on average, and how do you break it down, by the week, by the month, by the year?
It's about 1 hour per week per hive. In the beginning, the hives are small, but you don't know a whole lot, so It takes a little while to learn. Then as you know more, the hive is growing. So it works out to about every 7 to 10 days you're going to look at your bees, more in the spring and early summer and less in the fall. And then once the gardening season ends, it shuts down. And you sit on your hands and you wish you could go look at your bees, but you have to wait until March or April to go see them again.
So I guess the move then is to, like, instead of, like, throwing down $1,000 for, like, a huge screen TV or a surround sound system for the man cave, get yourself a top bar hive for the backyard, the deck, or the patio, and you'll not only enjoy kind of the sweet fruits of your labor, but you'll also be helping to repopulate the pollinators here in Connecticut and helping the plant environment of your neighborhood.
Absolutely, absolutely. And not only that, you'll probably find yourself watching less TV because you'll take your cup of coffee or your glass of wine, you'll go out and you'll sit and you'll watch your bees, and you'll just be fascinated.
Fantastic. So we'll tell people to go to goldstarhoneybees.com, or they could call 207-449-1121. Tell them Jeff Keller and the award-winning For the People sent you. We're here at the 35th annual NOFA Winter Conference at Western Connecticut State University, and we'll keep going and meet some more folks here on the floor. Jeff, thanks so much. Great to meet you.
Thank you very much. It was great talking to you.
All right, continuing to make the rounds here at the 35th annual NOFA Winter Conference at Western Connecticut State University, and we are running into a New Haven neighbor, Jacqueline Mason-Pierre, not only a relatively new steering committee member for the New Connecticut Farm Alliance, but also the farm manager at New Haven Farms in New Haven, Connecticut. NewHavenFarms.org is their website. Jacqueline, first of all, tell us a little bit about where you come from. What's New Haven Farms all about?
So thanks so much for interviewing us today. I am a Connecticut native. I grew up here in Danbury, and I moved to New Haven about 5 years ago for New Haven Farms. And so we are an urban farm. Our mission is to promote health and community development through urban agriculture. We have 7 different plots throughout the city, and we grow food for low-income families that struggle with chronic diet-related health issues. So we work with a couple local clinics that actually refer patients that are at risk for chronic diet-related illness, and we do cooking and nutrition and garden education and produce a large quantity of organic vegetables within the city and distribute it to families in need.
Fantastic. Do you have like-minded or like-missioned entities in some of Connecticut's other major cities?
We only operate in New Haven, but we certainly work with other organizations. We work closely with the other nonprofits in New Haven, City Seed, New Haven Land Trust, Common Ground, and then we work, we know of the other organizations. We work with Hartford Food System and GBI and Bridgeport, so a small state, so we kind of know the folks that are doing similar work.
Okay, so did New Haven Farms and your affiliation with it precede your volunteerism with the New Connecticut Farmer Alliance?
Yeah, so I've been farming in New England for about 7 years now, predominantly in Connecticut. I was up in Maine for a year, and when I moved back from Maine to Connecticut, was kind of feeling like a little envious of the network that exists in northern New England and organic farming in Vermont and Maine. They definitely have more of an allure for young farmers, and so I immediately kind of looked out for the farmers in Connecticut and how I could get involved and what existed there, and I immediately came across the New Connecticut Farmer Alliance, and so I'd been going to their events for the last couple years, and they asked me to be a steering committee member, and I've been working with them for a year now. It's a volunteer position and help on their steering committee.
So if I understand correctly, your guy, New Connecticut Farmer Alliance's primary mission is to get more new young farmers into the ground.
Yeah, so we grew very grassroots from a group of farmers that were like, hey, why aren't there any, you know, farmer networks in the state for young, new, organic, first generation type farmers? And so they started it. And so while our work, we started primarily as a social network, as a network to connect young farmers in the state so they can feel less isolated, they can have a group of people to bounce ideas off of. Our largest kind of service that we have is a statewide listserv that anyone is welcome to join. It's free to join. You can be a farmer, gardener, or farm type person, and so all of the information that goes out on that listserv is very specific to, like, who knows where to buy cheap straw in Litchfield, to who's got access to, you know, seasoned cow manure down in Tallinn or something. So it's a pretty wide range of things that get offered, but it's really a to connect other farmers and hopefully create a culture where Connecticut is attractive as well to new farmers.
So as a steering committee member, is there a sort of an end game for your association?
Personally, I just really believe in the community of farmers, and it's one of the things that really, when I started farming, kept me farming, because I realized that in so many other businesses or work, it's really competitive, and your competitors are your competitors, and you don't like socialize with them. It's not the same kind of environment. And in farming, while you are competitors, so to speak, we're all part of a movement, and you know, we're not in this alone, and people are incredibly supportive, and I've just really been awestruck by all of the farmers in the area. They support each other, they share resources, I have been rescued by other farmers from crop losses or different things that happen, and so I really feel indebted to the farming community and really want to build that and feel strongly about building that in this state.
Well, and also, I mean, it seems like the movement in Connecticut in recent years has been diversification in product or service. A lot of boutique farms that really don't compete against each other as much as they either complement each other or sort of kind of complete a quilt work, if you will, of various types of products or services that make the whole farm consumer experience whole.
Yeah, I mean, I think that largely has to speak with the kind of climate of land prices in this state. I mean, Connecticut is much more expensive to access land, and there is a higher level of wealth in Connecticut, especially in, you know, Fairfield County or Litchfield County. And so a lot of people, it is kind of becoming like trendy for people that have acquired wealth in other areas to then start a farm. And so that kind of leads to this more boutique nature of farms. And so in Connecticut, it is a hard place to start a farm as someone who is first generation or hasn't made their money on Wall Street or doesn't inherit land. And so that is definitely a challenge in this state because of high land prices.
Yeah. So if you are an emerging farmer or gardener or someone who thinks that that is the career for the rest of this century for them, you can get with this group, the New Connecticut Farmers Alliance, at newctfarmers.com. They're also on Facebook and Instagram. Or you can get in touch with our guest this morning, Jacqueline Mason-Pierre. She is on the steering committee for the New Connecticut Farm Alliance. Or you can learn more about the great work she's doing in Greater New Haven at newhavenfarms.org. Jacqueline, great to meet you. Thank you so much. All right. As we said, we are talking to the bee guy, and now we're going to give the worms equal time. Leilani Correa is joining me. She is with Burmi Compost and Wiggle Room. So, Leilani, tell us a little bit about what brings you here to the 35th annual NOFA Winter Conference.
Well, I actually work with 800,000 worms, and what we do is we filter out the worms from the compost, because you can take the compost and you put it on the plant, and it's like an organic miracle grow.
So how does it work?
Well, we have bins of worms, and we feed them about 5 pounds of natural oats and ground up vegetables, and they eat that, and they go through the soil multiple times, which helps to make it airy and light. And we scrape the bottom of the drawer. It actually has like its own filter, and it separates the worms from the compost, and we collect the compost and we keep the worms, and they continuously make more.
So you're selling this, the compost, by the bag?
That's exactly what we're selling.
And so is this as usable or used by small household gardeners as well as large-scale agricultural operations?
Yes, it is. Small household gardeners are actually a lot better for this, because this stuff is great for seedlings, because seedlings love rich soil.
Oh.
So you actually just put a little bit on top, or you can mix it with your own compost. You really don't need a lot of it because it's so rich, but it is best for indoor plants, 100%.
Oh, okay. And how did you get into this? Do you have a science or agricultural background?
I actually started working at Reservoir Community Farm in Bridgeport, Connecticut, 3 years ago, and I got connected by Monique Bosch, who is the founder of that farm, and this is her own business, separate from the garden. So she offered me a job, and I started working here along with the Reservoir Community Farm.
Oh, great. Good. And so where do you plan to go from here career-wise? Are you a gardener yourself?
Well, I mean, I love it as a job right now. It's a great hobby, but I actually want to be a marine biologist when I get older. Okay. But I love what I'm doing now.
Fantastic. So if people want to learn more, all they have to do is go to www.wiggleroom.org to learn more about the efforts of Burmi Compost, which is Bridgeport-based?
Bridgeport-based. Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Fantastic. Leilani Correa, thank you. Great to meet you. And thanks for a little bit of information about the worms of the world.
I'm happy to give it.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. And if you work or volunteer with a state nonprofit, visit the site to apply for one of our 2017 Love CT Foundation grants. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Boquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Bowl for Kids' Sake is happening on March 25th, and it's the biggest fundraiser of the year to help support over 400 matches and help find mentors to nearly 120 kids on the waiting list at Big Brothers Big Sisters of Southwestern Connecticut. And it's not about bowling skills. It's about fun and meeting a bunch of little brother and sister matches on site. It costs $1,000 a year to keep each one of these kids in a secure, supported mentor situation. And Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Southwestern Connecticut needs your help to make that happen because mentoring matters. So get ready to lace up, bowl, and fundraise. For details on this and other events, programs, and mentoring opportunities, just visit bbbsswct.org.
Well, as we try to do at least once a year, we are pleased to run into and visit with Agricultural Commissioner Steve Ritzke here at the NOFA 35th Annual Winter Conference at WestCon in Danbury. Steve, thanks so much again for taking time to talk with us. So let's broaden the scope out a little bit broader than Connecticut and take a look at the federal farm bill and what's happening right now in Washington and some of the concerns or issues that you have with what's happening as we speak.
Well, it's great to be here with you. Great to see you again. And it's great to be here at the NOFA conference. In terms of the farm bill, with a new Congress and a new administration in Washington, it's critically important that our farmers, even here in Connecticut, become engaged with our congressional delegation and focus on those issues that are important to the Northeast and New England and Connecticut specifically, conservation programs, new and beginning farmer programs, the organic programs, and certainly the nutrition title of the Farm Bill, which is important to a large segment of Connecticut's population. Mm-hmm. And there's always a fight, there, recently anyway, between some folks in Congress who want to divide the Farm Bill and take the nutrition title away from that. And, it is critically important to pass. In order for us to pass a Farm Bill in Congress, we need to keep the Farm Bill together. So we want to partner with our friends in the nutrition world, mm-hmm. and support farming and agriculture and keep the Farm Bill together.
Tell us what the implications are if that move to keep the nutrition aspect of the Farm Bill in place and under the single umbrella of that bill.
Well, if there were a division, there would be just no way humanly possible that you could get the votes necessary to achieve a majority in either chamber of Congress to get the agriculture programs or the nutrition programs. So you need to keep them together to actually get the votes necessary to do both.
Or both could suffer.
They both would suffer.
Will suffer.
Okay. Absolutely.
Great. Well, from a nutrition standpoint, what is the greatest risk, to the people in your jurisdiction here in Connecticut, if in fact there is diminished support for all of the current components of that the nutrition aspect of the Farm Bill?
I mean, the main thing here in Connecticut are the people who get to access food. Mm-hmm. So it's important that everybody have an opportunity to eat and to eat nutritious food. On the other end, I mean, there are some benefits that flow to people who produce the food. Quite frankly, most of the opposition to the nutrition title comes from states that have significant production agriculture. So it really doesn't make sense to me, mm-hmm. That they would oppose the nutrition title when most of the money that is spent on food actually flows to their states. There's something that doesn't quite connect there. But it's really important to us here in Connecticut, because we have people who do qualify for nutrition benefits under SNAP, and we want to make sure that those dollars continue to flow so that individuals can access nutritious, healthy food.
Yeah. And do I understand correctly that we also, not maybe just the farmers, but everyone in Connecticut really needs to keep an eye on and communicate with their lawmakers regarding food safety?
Yes, and before I leave the Farm Bill, I want to emphasize that the conservation title, farmland preservation, the money that goes to environmental quality incentives, the EQIP program, all of those programs that help protect our our environment are vitally important, because it's pretty, we have pretty strict environmental standards here in Connecticut, right. And we want to give a helping hand to farmers to help them comply with those laws and rules, and the conservation title in the Farm Bill helps us do that. In terms of food safety, in 2011, Congress passed and the President signed into law the Food Safety Modernization Act. As Commissioner of Agriculture, I've been working with commissioners and secretaries and directors of agriculture across the country to make sure that as a country we get this right. It's the first time in the history of the United States that we are regulating the production of fruits and vegetables, so the cultivation, harvesting, packing, holding, transportation of fruits and vegetables, and we have an obligation to get it right. And one of the key aspects of that is to make sure that farmers are aware of the rules and to help them comply with those new rules. So mm-hmm. education before and while mm-hmm. we regulate. And so we've worked long and hard to make sure that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration understands farming and agriculture. There's been a big tussle. We're here at Connecticut NOFA, and one of the big bones of contention with FSMA is the use of compost and manure in the production of food, and what those rules look like. Mm-hmm. And to FDA's credit, they have recognized the organic standards when it comes to the composting of manure and other organic matter, and then the application of that to production areas. Probably one of the biggest issues that's still out there is water that we use in agricultural production. So irrigation water, the testing of that water, the standards that will be acceptable to the FDA. So we're still working on those issues. It is going to cost farmers in Connecticut, New England, the Northeast, across the country, a lot of money to come into compliance. So one of the things that we've been doing here in the state of Connecticut is to recognize that burden on farmers, and we've modified our grant programs so that we can give assistance to farmers to do improvements to establishing water supply, converting to drip irrigation, improving their packing houses, the facilities that they have to wash produce and then pack it and hold it, and things like harvest bins on orchards that are meet the standards, the new standards, all of those things, they all cost money, and we want to provide a helping hand to farmers so that they're able to comply with the new rules. So we want to educate them what the rules are, and then we want to help them come into compliance.
But on the consumer end as well, I mean, on the rare occasion, perhaps you go to a big box commercial grocery store, or I do, whenever I'm shopping for fruits or vegetables, I'm looking at that little tiny, tiny little dot of a label that has even tinier print on it that tells me where that fruit or vegetable came from. And if there's a choice between getting apples grown in Maine or New York, or potatoes grown in the U.S. in Idaho, say, or even in Canada, versus from South America or other points on the globe, and it costs a little bit more per pound or per serving, I'm gonna throw my money down for the U.S. grown, and I think a lot of people would make that choice.
Well, I think you and I shop and think the same way. So I want to know my farmer. So if I have an opportunity to either grow it myself when I can, or to buy from my neighbor or the farm down the street somewhere in Connecticut, I do that first. Yeah. And then I look regionally, and then within the United States. And so I try to spend my dollars locally, and I think a lot of people, especially here at this conference, do.
Yeah. Even if it's a little more.
Even if it's a little more. I want to support my neighbors and folks from Connecticut.
Right.
The key component of the Food Safety Modernization Act that should not be lost is that when Congress enacted this law, they said that they were going to hold everyone to the same standard. So whether you were here in the United States or you were in another nation, that we all should be held to that same standard. And that's a challenge. And we want to hold the FDA to the what Congress passed and what was promised, so that if our farmers are being required to invest heavily to meet the new rules, we ought to all know that our food is safe. We all want safe food, and you know, a lot of us do have concerns about the food that comes from foreign nations. Is that water that they're using to irrigate? Is it potable?
Water, to handling, to transportation,
all of it, packing, all
and the time, the freshness.
Yes, from farm to fork, how long has it taken?
Right.
But you know, in terms of food safety, we really want the FDA to hold those foreign suppliers to the same standard that farmers in the United States are being held to.
Oh, great. Connecticut's Commissioner of Agriculture, Steve Ravitsky, here with us at the 35th Annual Winter Conference of the Northeast Organic Farming Association, giving us a great picture of how things that are happening in Washington and across the country have a significant impact here, both from the producer standpoint and the consumer standpoint. Commissioner, always great to speak with you.
Good to see you, too.
Very good. Having a great time here at the 35th Annual NOFA Winter Conference, making new friends, including a guy who looks like a farmer in the winter and shaves down to look much more like the renowned research scientist that he is. Rolf Martin is with me now, and he is in the very early stages of trying to organize the Sherman to Kent Family Farm Trail. So you've heard about the antique trails, you've heard about the wine trail, you've heard about various farm trails. This is going to be one that is geographically in one of the most beautiful pockets of all of Connecticut. So if you're listening out there on Long Island, Metro New York, Westchester County, Southern Massachusetts, Western Rhode Island, if this project comes to fruition, man, have we got a destination for you. Rolf, thanks for taking a few minutes. Tell us a little bit about this nugget of an idea that you've planted.
Well, thank you very much for that wonderful introduction. I think the idea merits that wonderful introduction because we have a number of fabulous farms in Sherman and also in nearby towns. I'm talking about Happy Acres Farm. It's a farm purchased by the town of Sherman that is run by two wonderful people. They have a lovely herd of cows, they have chickens, they have goats. Families like to go and see these creatures. And we thought, okay, that's good. If we can then go to White Silo Farm, where there's some times of the year berry picking, and then go up, this is a bit of a secret for the area, I think, an alpaca farm with a herd of alpacas. And it's also a bed and breakfast, so people can stay there. And that's one more step toward Kent, which is a lovely area.
Sure.
It's near some of the best kayaking in the Northeast, I've heard, near Bull's Bridge. The Housatonic River is a cascading series of rapids. Just absolutely wonderful area. And we thought, if you could schedule these at the right time, Sunday afternoons, when families have free time, they could go from one destination to another to a third and make a nice day of it, as if it was arranged by an expert tour guide.
Yeah, and I guess if they match that up with a picnic or a day hiking at Kent Falls and perhaps another half a day or a day on the rapids, they could make a long weekend out of it.
Yes, they could. And I should say, the start of this trail is a delightful restaurant, American Pie restaurant in Sherman. People come from relatively far away to enjoy their pies. They've won some awards for their cooking. Then we thought, oh, they might go. And I must say, there's some self-interest. My wife has a store. The kids go and they search for gems, minerals, jewelry. The store's name is Happy Rainbows. And if anybody wishes to follow up, on this and get a specific schedule to come up to this area, they can call 860-355-4959, and we'll have more information for you where this stands. At this point, people are enthusiastic about the idea, but we have not set a precise schedule yet. We're thinking Sunday afternoons because the Happy Acres farm is planning to have a marketplace where you can not only visit the goats and the chickens and the cows, but you can buy local items from a variety of places.
Okay. So aside from folks calling you who might be interested, is there any web or social network presence, Facebook, Twitter, website, anything like that?
So, yes, each farm has its own website.
Oh, okay.
And so you can go to Happy Acres Farm. I think it's happyacres.farm.
Yep.
And or you can go to Bella Alpacas. They have their own website. And Barlow Farm, that's B as in boy, A-R-L-O-W Farm, that's our farm,
okay,
has a Facebook page, so you can look us up on Facebook.
Oh, so run them through the search engine.
And each of these locations, I expect, will have links to a schedule, which weekend, which day, what events. And, of course, we're aiming to serve the families, giving them choices where you might try this one day, see the goats, the next time you spend more time picnicking on the Housatonic River near the rapids. A lot of this depends on the weather. Maybe a beautiful day, you might want to go boating on Lake Candlewood.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the most exciting things about this program is meeting folks like you, Rolf, who are just kind of, you get a glimmer in your eye for something and you start, and then I come back next year and, you know, you've got the website and you've got the schedule and you've got 8 or 10 farms on the trail. And I dare say a lot of times the early on visits with the award-winning For the People do come to fruition. So I wish you well. And I tell people, having lived in on the Sherman New Fairfield line myself, that if you imagine any painting or photo of a classic New England farm, spring, summer, fall, or winter, chances are you could drive 15 or 20 miles between New Fairfield and Kent, and if you don't see that actual farm, that's sort of the quintessential image of a New England farm, then something's wrong.
And in fact, I think something is very right, because the town of Sherman agrees with you, agrees with your value, and they spent millions of dollars to make sure Happy Acres Farm is now a town-owned farm. They brought in a wonderful family to manage it, and it's a real delight. Every time you go by, it looks absolutely beautiful, and it gives the best fresh vegetables I've ever had. Super crisp, right from the garden. Go there, they collect the eggs from the chickens, put them right in your egg basket. It's a wonderful place to have.
Yeah, nothing like getting the eggs late in the morning to go home and have a brunch.
Yes.
Nothing like that fresh egg. So Rolf Martin is working to organize the Sherman to Kent Family Farm Trail, and Rolf will wrap it up with just the phone number for people to call if they're interested.
Well, the phone number I'm giving is 860-355-4959. And we'll have information on the status of the trail and which final websites have the schedule for you. And we hope some people come up from Long Island and other areas and enjoy what this area has to offer. Thank you so much.
You hope to be up and running by summer 2017?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Rolf Martin, great to meet you. Right. Well, we've hit the bees, we've hit the worms. Now it's time for alpacas and some organic fire cider, or at least some information on where to get it, with Sal Apicella. He's with Bella Alpacas. They run a B&B. And now, Sal, are you in Sherman or Kent?
No, we are in New Milford. Even though we are like halfway in between Sherman and Kent.
You could see Sherman from...
Correct.
From the high points, right?
Outside our house, we can see Sherman.
Well, tell us what brings you to the 35th annual NOFA Winter Conference.
So we have been doing this for a couple of years now, and we like to support the NOFA and whatever they believes are. We are an alpaca farm, And we rescue most of our animals. So there's no harm in our animals. They're not for meat. They're not for consumption, any of that. Since we are a sanctuary, we also rescue a couple of other animals. With the alpacas, we harvest their fiber once a year, in April usually. And the whole process takes close to 10 months to get to a finished product, from their fiber to the cleaning.
From the hoof to the socks.
Correct. And then by the time we get to the socks, it's been 10 months, like I said before. Also, my wife has been an herbologist for many, many years. And because of that, we also grown our own organic herbs and produce many wonderful things for your health, for your skin care, and for all these nice things.
So, and you have a B&B?
We do have a bed and breakfast. We like to call it more as a farm stay.
Ah, okay.
And people mostly from out of town, they like to come over and spend a day or two.
Sure.
And enjoy the alpacas. We have about 30 alpacas at this point, and they roam around the farm, and people are just come and stay and enjoy their time with the animals.
Well, you've got bins and bins of snuggly looking socks, but you've also got some other interesting products we mentioned, including one that looks like it's some sort of a preventative elixir for Lyme disease.
It's just like a natural remedy that helps mostly for anything you would use an antibiotic. It's not an antibiotic, it's just a natural remedy that is homemade and helps with a variety of things.
And tell me about your organic fire cider.
It's just an old recipe that personally nobody can really claim this recipe. It's from Europe and is about 200 years old. It's just a really wonderful tonics that helps with prevent cold and flu, for instance, also help with your digestive system.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, it's very well known, it's very popular, especially in the past couple of years.
Yes.
All the beautiful
gut
benefits
bacteria
of the apple cider vinegar,
yeah.
And that's what pretty much is all about.
Very good. So how do people learn more about you, and how can we help send a few more visitors up to Bella Alpacas?
We have a full website, which is www.bellaalpacas.com, and we have wonderful information about what we do and what our goal in the farm is.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Sal Apicella is with Bella Alpacas, as you've heard. Whether you go up there to check out their line of alpaca-generated fashions or some of the other products, or you just want to hang out with these beautiful, peaceful animals, they'd be happy to have you. Sal, great to chat with you. Well, one of the most exciting things I started learning about as I started working with FarmAid about 10 years ago was this movement to connecting farmers with schools and getting the freshest, healthiest, best-tasting food to kids on the front cafeteria lines at schools across the country. And I'm so excited to meet Crizel Soriano, who is an outreach specialist for Put Local on Your Tray, an initiative tied to UConn. You can learn about them at putlocalonyourtray.ucon.edu, and we'll hear a little bit more about it from Crizel.
Sorry.
I'm saying it like I spelled it.
Yeah, it's not, the spelling is not helpful.
So, you know, we've got a few minutes. Tell us a little bit about this effort.
Yeah, so Put Local on Your Tray is out of UConn Extension. It's a program to help school districts celebrate local produce that they might already be serving. So for us, what happens is a district will sign up and they'll look at one of our 12 products that we feature, and we provide them with materials to market and highlight the good produce that they're bringing to the schools.
And what's a sampling of those products that you feature?
We have green beans, squash, winter and summer squash. We have apples, beets, carrots, corn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So both the main course accompaniments and dessert items or snack items.
Yeah, snack items. So we have the sides and the entrees. We have a full suite of products that last throughout the whole year. So we work with schools to highlight things during the school year, but also for summer meals.
So how long has this initiative been living at UConn?
This is... the first year that it's gone live. The year before this, it was piloted in 5 districts.
Oh, okay.
But it started a little bit before that, very small scale, 4 products, and we've expanded now to the 12.
Well, it's obviously getting traction. So now you have 12 in the program, or that was just with the pilot?
We have 12 products.
12 products.
Yeah, 12 products.
How many districts?
We have 35 districts right
wow.
now, and it's continuing
That's
to grow
fantastic.
As well.
Good,
yeah.
Good. So tell us a little bit about what the reaction is like from, because I guess a lot of school districts have either a district-wide or even institutional food services.
Yes.
Is there a growing measure of embracement to partnering with organizations like yours from, like, you know, kind of the big national or regional cafeteria companies?
Yeah, we do work with Sodexo in East Hartford. That's just one example. The big thing for us is that, like, we're providing the marketing materials, which can be a little bit hard for districts who are already featuring these things, because it can be hard to, you know, make up a poster and really promote yourself. But using our products really showcases it without a lot of effort on their end as far as the marketing goes, because the actual sourcing and the finding of everything and working it into their menu can be a time-consuming itself.
And what are you hearing from either surveying the purveyors at the school district level or the end users? Are they seeing and tasting a difference?
Yeah, definitely seeing a difference just because it's being pointed out to the students. And we use things like the bookmarks and the stickers just to really highlight it for them. Yeah, make it fun and make it engaging for them.
Fantastic. So, folks, if you want to learn more and maybe bring this initiative to your school district, you can mention you heard Krizel on the award-winning For the People, and then just go to putlocalonyourtray.ucon.edu. Krizel Suriano, thank you so much. Great
thank
to
you.
Meet you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.